Psalm 37. We come to the end tonight, and of the last of nine verbs that we've been learning about, and this verb is remarkable. It's unbelievable, all the things that I found out. My heart was blessed, and I was convicted in my heart about this word and about what it means and how it reaches up into the few verses before and reaches down to the rest of the chapter and kind of encapsulates it all for us. But look, if you would, please, at the very verb in verse 37. Mark, there's the verb, mark, underscore it in your Bible, mark the perfect man and behold the upright. For the end of that man is, you tell me, peace. Wow, mark the perfect man. What does that mean? Marking is important. The word mark, if you look back in verse 34, and it says, look at the B part. We dealt with this last week. Waiting, are we good waiters and keepers? Wait on the Lord and keep His way. And that word keep and the word mark are the same Hebrew word. Now think with me, if you would, just for a moment. It means to guard. It means to give heed to. And here in the area of marking the perfect man, to keep everything in its context, you have to move back up to verse 35. Because here's what mark means. It means to understand who they are, to know them, know their character, their flaws, if they're a wicked person, or their strengths if they're a righteous person. Look back up in verse 35. I've seen the wicked in great power. In other words, he said, hey, I want you to know, I have taken a close look at the wicked. I've seen the wicked in great power and spreading himself like a green bay tree. These are characteristics of someone who has decided, I'm going to mark both the wicked, and here's the idea here, in the whole context of things, mark the perfect man, but also mark the wicked man. Find out his characteristics. And what his end will be. Look at verse 38. But the transgressors shall be destroyed together, and the end of the wicked shall be cut off. If we would but look, if we would but mark, observe, learn not only the characteristics, but where those characteristics take that person, that takes that person down a road to an end. And for the transgressor, it is a hard way. It is a hard road. But look at verse 39. But the salvation of the righteous is of the Lord, and their strength. He is their strength in the time of trouble. Where does their road end? It ends in God helping them. And the Lord, look at verse 40. And the Lord shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trust in Him. In other words, where's the end of this righteous man or this perfect man? Not sinless perfect, but this complete man. This man complete in Him. All right. Here's what I want us to do. 2 points to the message. Let's mark the wicked man. Let's look in the text and mark the wicked man. And let's mark the perfect man. Just do two things tonight. Simple as it is. All right, let's go back to verse 35. The idea about marking is know who he is. And the psalmist knew who the wicked was. He observed them. We must be able to identify the wicked. So what are some of the obvious characteristics? All right, look at number one, verse 35. They can exercise great power. Evidently, people, wicked people, have power. Do you know a very wicked person that has power? Sure you do. Absolutely. Wicked people have immense power. So much so that it goes to their head. They can exercise power. So when you see a wicked person exercise power in a wrong way, be careful. I know a pastor tonight who will be sentenced. Talked to him over the phone not long ago. Who will be sentenced he'll get at least 10 years in a federal penitentiary for his sin, for breaking the law. How sad that is. And then notice the B part of verse 35. They can appear strong and right, spreading himself like a green bay tree. Well, first of all, what is a green bay tree? We'll deal with the verb about this, spreading himself. But what's the noun all about? What is a green bay tree? It's a native herb-type shrub that often is planted, but it eventually gets transplanted for various reasons, anything from erosion control to personal reasons. But the idea behind this, and the Hebrew Christians, they know what this green bay tree is all about. And so it often gets transplanted. Notice the wicked man is like the green bay tree that spreads. In other words, now there is a comparison. We have plant life compared to a human being that is wicked. How does this all line up? Well, the green bay tree is a metaphor. In other words, it is a picture for us. It's a type. It describes a rebellious Israelite that refuses to give up his space when he should be transformed or transplanted. The idea about a strong-willed person as having being like a green bay tree is that they're rebellious. They're an independent spirit. They're just not going to do it. They're independent, indigenous in their own will and mind, and they refuse to be controlled. They refuse to submit. If they should be dug up and transplanted, they say no. They refuse. So even though it would be for the better good, even though it would be the right thing to do, they still refuse. Think about that in the mindset of being rebellious. This green bay tree, this person that represents this green bay tree, he thrives on the abuse of power. No wonder he's drunk on it. No wonder he is exercising great power. He wields that sword purposely in his own mind and heart. Matter of fact, this person can shame those that don't agree with him, make them feel belittled, intimidate them, get them to cow down to them. He seeks confederates who will put their blessings on his power. So he likes control. He's a rebel. Things that are serious, he wants to make funny. Disrespect and rebellion against authority. This is a picture of the green bay tree. A person who is like that, who's compared to that. And he rebels against any authority over him. Don't tell me what God's word says. I don't want to hear that. So they exercise great power. This is the characteristics of them. They can appear very strong and right. They can put pressure on you to control you. And then look at verse 35. Spreading himself. They can thrive. They can live out this way. Till God cuts them off, cuts them down. This idea of spreading himself is a flourishing in his vigor and attracting others to himself. And he spreads himself. The word spreading means to lay out bare. It is a term that actually means to be nude, to be naked. And many people take off their morals. Many people undress themselves. They take their character off. After all, that's what the rebel does. He lays all to bear. And he will undress himself in his own rebellion for all to see who he really is. Quite embarrassing. In today's culture, we have all kinds of venues people do that. Facebook, they do it. They tweet and do it. Don't they? Sure they do. Say some pretty strange things. Who really cares if you got up at 7 o'clock and washed your face and brushed your teeth? I don't need to know that at 7 o'clock. I've got 2 hours worth of work under my belt by then, most of the time. You can get up on your own and brush your teeth and you don't have to tweet me about it. It's okay. I don't need to know. TMI. People give out way too much information about that stuff. His influence is intoxicating. That's the spreading. What's the whole point? Can appear to be thriving. Now, the whole time, God knows. His spreading captures the follower and attracts the fool. If you're a simpleton, and I'm not saying that as a downer. I'm not saying that to pick on you. But we've already looked at the five fools of Proverbs. Remember that? How many of you remember that series? We can do and say some pretty foolish things, can't we? We can act pretty simple. A follower and a fool are often attracted to the funny bone of a rebel. And they want to be accepted by the rebel. So they want to laugh at what the rebel is leading in. They want to get his approval. They want to get in his camp. And so oftentimes his spreading captures the follower and the fool. Another thing I thought about is that this spreading preys on the weak and the anemic. Those who are not strong in their faith. After all, these people that are rebellious are deceivers. Deceiving their followers, destroying their respect for authority, diverting their faith, and derailing their commitment to God. It's unfortunate when we have Green Bay trees growing in our homes, in our churches, in our nation, the workplace. They can emerge and appear trustworthy. Because we know them. We rub shoulders with them. But the Bible does teach us that spreading himself, that reveals his personal ambition to strip away all of his character so that he can exercise his free will. I mean, after all, he's an independent spirit. And he bears his rebellion. You know what that means? That means if we're looking carefully, if we're good discerners, we can see it. We can see that when he undresses himself in his rebellion and spreads himself out. It is a discerning thing. We have to be, notice what the verse says, mark the perfect man. We have to be walking with the Lord to do it. He is like, notice what it says in verse 35, he is like a Green Bay tree. There's a similarity to the characteristic of this tree. Here's another string of thoughts, if we can put them this way, a thread that we can think about. Green Bay trees were everywhere. Shrubs, common, everywhere. They weren't foreigners. There wasn't a foreign tree. A rebel's often not a foreigner. He's really not a stranger. He belongs to a good family. She belongs to a Christian home. But yet, this person, though not a stranger, No, they will not bring an obvious idol into worship. They know better than that. It just slowly decays. It gets worse and worse and worse and worse. The Israelites would never let a foreigner come in, a stranger come in and bring their gods. They had war over that. They fought over that. Because they did not want, they wanted to keep the commandments of God. Sometimes I think when they were fighting immorality and idolatry that led to apostasy, we're fighting other things. We're fighting anything from video games to parents who aren't plugged in. The psalmist was saying, these Israelites are among us and they're wicked. They're of us. We have to be cautious. They're close to us. Matter of fact, they were so close that they could not be alienated. They were family. Some of them even felt free from oppression. It doesn't matter. I'm going to do my own thing. Because after all, Jewish law said that even if I got in trouble, my family would come and help me without even charging me interest if it was a financial issue. That's the implication here. It's a deep root about the Green Bay tree. It goes further than what we think. How often it is that some think that they can play a mom and a dad against one another. How many times have four-year-olds tried that? I didn't say 14 years old. Four-year-olds do it. People play you, do they not? Try to divide mom and dad. Try to divide you from your boss. Try to divide you from your friend. Oppression. It's a horrible thing to deal with. This person lives in such ease sometimes that the consequences of his sin seems far removed because of his popularity and his power. After all, most people have a wrong view of who he really is anyway. That's why people let down their guard and allow someone to capture them. So if we don't discern all of this, it could cause us to get caught in a trap very easily. We can't become like the Green Bay tree, and we do not want to be trapped by one. We just don't want that. And while the Green Bay tree thinks that he's getting by with all of his rebellion, and though his mom might not know it and his dad might not know it, or his wife or her husband might not know it, but I want to tell you who does know it. God knows it. He knows it all. The eyes of the Lord go to and fro the earth, beholding both the good and the evil. He knows. Now I want you to look at verse 36. Yet, now here's someone who thinks that he's a hotshot. I mean, he's the BMOC. Got me? You know what the BMOC is? How many of you with me? BMOC. Big man on campus. He's the hot dog. All right? Ready for this? Now watch what the Bible says. Yet he passed away, and lo, he was not. You got to remember, this is a shrub. When shrubs are cut down, they don't last long. They come and go quickly. We would say it this way in our jargon, dime a dozen, easy to find. Yet the rebel's life went by without anyone really missing him. That's what it's saying here. They're not oaks. They're shrubs. The phrase passed away simply means that one day he just ceased to exist. He's just gone. out of the picture. Verse 34 deals with it. When the wicked are cut off, thou shalt see it. Last phrase. Now he wants us to be sure we get this thing about him coming and going, this rebel coming and going. He wants us to be sure we get it, because notice what else he says in verse 36. He wants us to get a double take of this. Lo, he was not. He's saying this. Hey, look, see, he came and he's gone. And no one's going to really miss him. Because of his rebellion, his lifestyle, being a wicked person, his life and his testimony was without any credibility. He had no integrity. He was useless. When his life didn't have to be that way. Verse 38, notice it there, if you would. They'll be what? Cut off. Let me give you some examples in the Bible that you'll know immediately is the truth is the truth. You ever read the life of Saul in the Bible? Saul was a Green Bay tree. Clear as a bell. Saul made the right decisions for 2 years. After 2 years, he never made a clear decision for the glory of God after 2 years. By the time that he disobeyed God, by bringing back the livestock and the kings, he lost his crown over it. A Green Bay tree. It got to where nobody could tell him what to do. He even got ahead of God. He even went as far as to be the prophet and the priest. I mean, read his story. It's pathetic. And yet, he was among them. Head and shoulders above everyone else. If anybody looked like should have been king, it was Saul. How sad. Last year when we were going through the life of Peter, and I thought about this in my study, and I wrote this in my notes here. Simon the sorcerer, Green Bay tree, died and went to hell even though he thought getting baptized would be enough. Green Bay tree. I've often wondered if I haven't met some Green Bay trees in my ministry. I believe that had I gone on in my rebellion, I would have been a Green Bay tree. Probably wouldn't. I know I wouldn't be your pastor today. Might not even be alive. I'm so thankful. I've not done everything right. I've not been a perfect, and I certainly hadn't been without rebellion and an independent spirit from time to time. Not perfect. Sinless, that is. But I'm so glad that God got my attention. Because rebellion always leads to being cut off. In our ministry in West Virginia, Mark Falls came and got saved on our through our bus ministry. He's 14. A few weeks after he got saved, living with his grandparents, his mother was a harlot in a red light district, and his dad was an alcoholic and druggie. His grandparents were raising him because mom and dad couldn't. Grandparents were retired. He was a retired coal miner. They were in their 70s. Now raising this teenage son, he gets saved. They come to our church. We're grateful for that. July the 4th, having our Sunday school picnic, we rented a facility in Fairmont, West Virginia that had a lodge and had a large area, several acres. And there's a little cow pond on the property, and they had plenty of acreage where we could do yard games. And we were just going to have a church picnic. Got there early. A few of the teenagers came early. Unbeknownst to me, some of those teenagers decided to disobey the rules, wear their swim trunks underneath their pants. We got there and they wanted to go to the pond, and I told them no, that we weren't going to have a swimming activity, that swimming wasn't included. This was a picnic, no swimming. They snuck off to the pond. And Mark thought, because it was a cow pond, Mark thought that it was about 3 or 4 foot deep, because on the edges, cows would go into the pond. Unbeknownst to me, a quarter mile away down the hill and around the cove, this little cow pond, 6 or 8 acres, there's some kayaks and there's a rowboat. Some of those boys get in the kayaks. The girls were standing on the shore. And Mark stood up in his kayak and was rocking it back and forth, and that kayak flipped him. And Mark wasn't afraid, because he couldn't swim, but he knew it was only 3 or 4 foot deep. But the kayak flipped in 8 foot of water. They come running up the hill saying, "Mark is in the water and he hasn't come up." There's only 6 men there. We got there early, set the games up. We ran down the hill. I was the only man that could swim. The other 5 men couldn't swim. And so I had them row the rowboat out. I saw where the Mark's kayak had capsized. And I went out and I began to propel myself down in the water. The mucky bottom, I would walk along the bottom and I would zigzag. And I walked and zigzagged in that area for 45 minutes. And finally I walked on top of Mark. And I dove down and I could feel his face, and I grabbed him by his hair and I pulled him up and I looked into his face. Hot July day, 45 minutes in water. Mark was gone. We pulled him to the shore. The ambulance crew had gotten theirs way out in the country by then. And I watched them pump sand and muck out of his lungs as we tried to get that boy to breathe. We couldn't do it. And Mark was gone. It devastated our church. Front headline picture of the West Virginia Times the next morning was me standing there, bare-chested, with my Levi's on, trying to revive Mark. I can't even begin to tell you the next 2 years and the lawsuit that we had to go through and all the ramifications of that. I'm glad God settled it all. But my heart was broken because a life was taken so quickly. I'm independent. I'm on my own. I can do what I want to do. I don't have to obey the rules. Behind my mom and dad's back, I might be a fixture around here, but I want to tell you, behind there, I'm going to give everybody else a hard time. You see, Green Bay trees are cut off. I don't know whether Mark was a Green Bay tree, but I've often wondered what could have happened to a young man had he not disobeyed, had he not thought it was cute to stand up in a kayak. Had he not been trying to impress the girls? Had he not been trying through his rebellion and independent spirit to break the rules? You see, marking, getting to know the rebel is very important. That way you'll not play the part of the fool. That way you'll stand up to the rebel. Be the leader that you should be. And that's why verse 37 brings us to the text, Mark the perfect man. Here's a man that's complete. The word picture here is that really he's a fine physical specimen. He's a picture of strength and beauty. And behold, the upright. Look at verse 37. It means he's straight. Job was an upright man. He had character. For the end, verse 37, of that man is peace. Not being cut off, the prime of life. Not being cut off because of rebellion. But having a life of tranquility. Even when hard times are upon them. This word, Hebrew word, peace is The word shalom, we know it so well. He is their strength. But the salvation of the righteous is the Lord. So he's the salvation of their, listen, of their life and their soul. Both of them. He is their strength. It means a fortress of safety, a stronghold, a refuge, a place of protection from harm and fear and danger. I want to tell you something. There's nothing any more disturbing than having to preach a funeral of a 14-year-old. It's a difficult thing to do. He is their strength in time of trouble, in time of their anguish or adversity or their distress. In time of trouble, and help them. Surround them with purpose. And he delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked. He makes a way of escape to slip away from anything from spiritual to physical danger. Oh, how foolish. I look back over those young years of my life. How foolish. Some of the foolish things that I did. So dangerous. Dumb. Stupid. So thankful for God's mercy. So I sat down and wrote a hermeneutic of the passage. Mark or know the difference between the wicked and the upright. Guard against the rebellious. Keep your loyalty to the Word of God. Keep your spiritual dignity. Do not undress yourself in your rebellion. Look well to your integrity and shape your testimony after the same. Why? Because regardless of how old you are, people are coming behind you. There's a progeny watching. Do not undress yourself, revealing your rebellion. Do not come and go in this life, leaving no legacy, leaving no memory of righteousness. Rather, determined to become a perfect or complete Christian, staying clothed in your right mind, keep your innocence and remember it has influence. Be a spiritual leader and enjoy salvation and strength and deliverance. And have good days. Better to end your Christian life in dignity than in disobedience. And I say that from my heart. Because sometimes I fear for us. We just can't toy with rebellion. That's nothing that you make light of. May the Lord help us with it. Would you stand with me, please?